The Third Crusade, 1187 to 1191. This one is the famous Crusade of Kings, because we have Richard the Lionhearted, who is the King of England. We have Philip II, the King of France, and Frederick Barbarossa, or Frederick I, the Holy Roman Emperor. So this one should have been a slam dunk. And unfortunately, the three will never actually get there at the same time. Now, the crusade is preached on October the 29th, 1187, in response to the recapture of Jerusalem by Saladin. Pope Gregory the 8th issues the bull Audata Tremendi, which calls for the Third Crusade. But, you know, he also has ulterior motives here. You've got England and France fighting over territory. You've got fighting in the Holy Roman Empire. And Gregory believes that if you could focus these warlike tendencies on something more, a little higher, shall we say, that this would be better for everybody. And so he'll be instrumental in working out a deal to keep the English and the French from going at each other. Of course, the English king at the time is not Richard the Lionhearted. That is Henry II of England, Henry Plantagenet. And on two occasions in 1188, Henry and Philip meet to discuss participating in a military, crusade against the Muslims, and that works out pretty well. And then, unfortunately, before Henry can take off on July the 6th, 1189, he dies and is succeeded then by Richard I, or Richard Coeur de Lion, Richard the Lionhearted, who really doesn't care that much about England, but he certainly is well known there. Now, of the three, the first one to march with the largest army is Frederick I, Frederick Barbarossa, the Hohenstaufen. Okay, he may have had as many as 100,000 troops under his command, and even though he is, some sources say 68, other sources say 70. Even though he's elderly, he's still in great condition and takes up the cross. He'd been ruler of Germany for 35 years when this took place. Unfortunately, he's not going to make it. He is going to drown on June the 10th, 1190. Now, when he arrived in Asia Minor, one of the problems that he has is that the Byzantines have a treaty with Saladin. And Emperor Isaac II Angelus wants Frederick to get out as fast as he possibly can. And so they're going to march on across. And on this June the 10th date, Frederick dies while crossing the Salaf River in Cilicia, in the southeastern part of Anatolia. And no one even to this day has a good idea as to what took place. There was one version that he may have been taking a refreshing swim and drowned, but the most likely story is that he was thrown from his horse while trying to cross this river. Now, there is a version that says, well, the river is very cold, and the shock caused him to have a heart attack. There's another version which simply says that the river was kind of a flood stage, and he got overwhelmed. At any rate, he died. And according to an Arab historian, Ibn al-Athir, he claims that he drowned in water that was just supposedly hip deep, but was weighed down by his armor. So we've got a lot of different choices as to what happens. We just know that he dies. All right, now the body is recovered, and the body is then buried in several places. Most of his flesh is interred at the Church of St. Peter at Antioquia. His bones are buried in the cathedral at Tyre, and his heart and inner organs are at Tarsus. And this is not uncommon for major leaders to have their body parts buried in different places. When Richard the Lionhearted dies, his body is in a certain place, his internal organs are in a certain place, but his heart is buried there amongst the Norman knights at Rouen. You can go up to the main altar there at Rouen and see the it's a full-sized sepulcher, and he just has his hands over his chest, which indicate that he has a heart. Now that his heart is buried there. Now there are a couple of odd little stories too that go along with Frederick. One is that the claim that he held the legendary Spear of Destiny, which according to myth made whoever held it unstoppable, and that he supposedly lost it and then soon after died. Another version is that his spirit lives in Germany. There is one where he lives in a cave and his beard continues to grow, and people drowning I believe it's the Rhine River. Sometimes he'll throw their beard, and other times that he's living in this cave with other dead German knights waiting for the call to come out and do battle again. So there's a lot of really neat stuff that's associated with him. This cave is supposed to be in Thuringia, in Germany. And there's all kinds of little odds and end things that come in here. But, you know, most of the army will go home. However, about 5,000 of the knights will manage to make it in. You have Philip II, Philip Augustus, King of Spain. Spain is King of France, okay? And he will come in. He's really not a warrior. He's more concerned with European affairs. He's always trying to keep an eye on what Richard is doing. But he is the one who begins attempting to strengthen the French monarchy, which is why he comes into almost a constant conflict with his rival, Henry II, and then Richard I of England, who in theory is a vassal under him. And then, of course, you have Richard I, Richard Coeur de Lion, Richard the Lionhearted, son of Henry II and Eleanor of Aquitaine. He's not a great king, but he is a great soldier, but spent most of his time elsewhere in France. Dashing figure, fearless in battle, superb, chivalrous individual. There are stories that he may have had a little trouble with homosexuality. There are some discussions that he went on a crusade to help out on the as penance. There are various sources that claim that he had one illegitimate child, but most people will talk about that he was probably was gay. He did marry on the way to the Third Crusade. At this point, he married Berengaria of Navarre, and that was supposed to work things out. He marries her on May the 12th, 1191. That's the firstborn daughter of King Sancho VI of Navarre. So Richard is going to show up in 1191. So we start this early, and then everybody then begins to show up at bits and pieces. You actually have Philip arriving in 1191 in April at the town of Acre. And Richard's not ready to show up there. He's not going to make it until a little bit later on in June before he comes in. There's a story that when he came ashore that he jumped into the water in full armor and waded ashore. And there's a video on the Crusades done by, and it's historically accurate, but it's done in kind of a humorous way. It has a couple of the people from the Monty Python and the Holy Grail series, and so they recreated that. They put, I believe it's Michael Palin, in a full suit of chainmail armor and whatever, and about where Richard is supposed to have jumped into the water, he jumped into the water. And he was able to get ashore, and he certainly isn't as physically large as you would have had Richard. But and then there's one other little group that comes in. We're very familiar with Saladin, the greatest Muslim commander of the time period, huge empire. But there's a little group that I haven't mentioned, and that's the Assassins. The Assassins is a fanatical Muslim sect whose name is actually derived from hashish, a drug which they supposedly took while they performed their various murderous rites. But it's a medieval terrorist organization conducting political assassinations throughout the East. Their most famous success is the murder of Conrad of Montferrat in 1192, who was one of the two claimants to the throne of Jerusalem. The other one, Guy Luzon, who was captured by Saladin at the Battle of Hattin and then later released. And so you don't just have the Crusaders coming in from Europe. You have Richard and Philip having to deal with, okay, who's the rightful Latin ruler of this area? And Montferrat got off to a very bad start with Richard by not allowing him even the land in Tyre. And then they try to fix it up, and about the time they fix it up, Conrad gets assassinated. And eventually, Conrad of Montferrat's wife will marry one of the other, it's Henry of Champagne, supposedly to provide a new king. But the Crusaders are not going to retake the Holy Land in this instance. They do successfully take the city of Acre. And there's a lot of fighting about, a lot of casualties over this whole issue. When the city of Acre surrendered, during the siege, they lost, supposedly, this is by their accounts, supposedly lost 6 archbishops, 12 bishops, 40 earls, 500 barons, and 300,000 soldiers. Needless to say, they lost a lot of people, but I can't conceive them having enough food in the area to feed that many. 100,000 would have been probably tops figure. And that city will then remain in Crusader hands until 1291. There is an attempt to move from there as a base, to move towards Jerusalem, which is unsuccessful. There is a battle in September of 1191, the Battle of Arsuf, where Richard the Lionhearted and Hugh of Burgundy are ambushed. But Richard was ready, and they defeat the Muslim forces at that point. And then by the time they get to January of 1192 and they're prepared to attack Jerusalem, the weather, it's winter now, they're going to retreat and take winter quarters and wait until the springtime, until the weather is better. And then when they try to do it the second time, when they move forward in June of 1192, they're turned back because Saladin is practicing scorched earth policy. He's burning everything in their path and befouling all the water. So they're stuck. And so what you end up with, the Third Crusade ends on September the 2nd, 1192, with the Treaty of Jaffa. And this is negotiated between Richard and Saladin, although they never saw each other. Christian pilgrims are granted special rights to travel around Palestine and in Jerusalem. Richard managed to capture the cities of Daron, Jaffa, Acre, and Ashkelon. And so they are allowed to keep those four, which is an improvement over the situation before. And the kingdom of Jerusalem is basically those four cities. And it never reaches any deeper than about 10 miles inland. And that's it. And, of course, on the way back, Richard is captured and held for ransom. And the following year, in March 1193, Saladin dies. And then you have a squabble over who's going to take over the empire of Saladin. And so it will then collapse. So this is a real, you know, It starts off great, but it's not a disaster, but it certainly doesn't come close to meeting expectations. One of the reasons why, you know, you ended up with the Children's Crusade, they thought, my God, if these people couldn't do it, maybe we're purer, okay? And it's not necessarily a numbers issue. We have good leadership on both sides. One thing that did take place, Richard received a very unique gift, and that is Saladin sent him one of his own personal doctors. And the note basically said, here is one of my best doctors. I have seen the medicine of the West, and I fear for your life, Richard. And they actually did a test between the doctors. And the Muslim doctors use spices, herbs, poultices. It's a little different, a little more surgical, not quite as grab the axe and chop the legs off. They do have a much better knowledge of medical help. Not that Richard needed it at this particular point. So what should have been the greatest crusade is one of the dismal failures. And then, of course, the fighting that ensues afterwards. You're going to have problems in the Holy Roman Empire with the death of Frederick, with the ransom of Richard that's going to drain money out of England, and then his ultimate release, and then death shortly thereafter. England would have been better off just to kept the money. And then Philip does okay, pulling in some more land from Richard when it's all over and done with, but we're just about done crusading. As a matter of fact, this is the last crusade that goes to the Holy Land. All of the rest of the crusades, the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th, go to Egypt instead in an attempt to take decent ground and bargain it for Jerusalem. So, hope you enjoyed that. It's very, very, very complicated. It's a lot more complicated than it's usually presented in regular classrooms because of the infighting between Guy and Conrad of Montferrat and all the other things that get tossed into it. The sources for this are, I'm going to say here by now. It's Runciman, Volume 3 of The History of the Crusades, and The Dream in the Tomb by Payne, Warriors of God by Reston, and The Third Crusade, 1191, by Nicole. So, again, I hope you enjoyed that. Don't forget, come by summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com. See what's there. Ask a question, leave a comment, and thank you very much.